is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel and DraftKings. Of course, we are bringing you the Week 3 player breakdown just in time for Wednesday evening, Thursday, maybe during the day. You're checking this one out before football begins on Thursday evening. Rams 49ers tomorrow night. Actually, interesting game. I got 49ers in that one. No doubt about it. I think Carlos Hyde is going to take advantage of the fact that the Rams rushing defense has not been effective, and he has been very good, very good. And, you know, we got content coming up on lineuplogicdfs.com. Just yesterday published PGA championship breakdown for DFS. Get in there on that one. Just saw Spectre is going to be publishing his MLB takes tonight, so check that out. We just posted a lineup review of the takedown that Spectre and KG had over the weekend on DraftKings. And my man Roto-Juan, Mike Alexander, just put up his first column of the week, run defenses he is targeting for DFS this week. So it's all coming on. It's all coming on to lineuplogicdfs.com. It's all free over there, guys. The blog roll, all free. You can find anything and everything you want for golf and football and even a little bit of baseball. Spectre's been on point with his breakdown. So definitely keep that in mind as we go forward into the weekend. There's going to be content coming up, so keep your eyes peeled on the website. Hey, patreon.com/lineuplogic. Just saw a couple new faces pop up over there. Welcome. Welcome aboard. Cheat sheet released on Friday afternoon. Lineup show Friday night, 8:30. Tune in for the live stream. It is fun. It's fun. It's a hoot is what it is. That's the word. It's a hoot. All right, let's not waste any more time. Going to jump straight into the player breakdown because I just realized I got 10 pages of notes to read to you guys. I got 10 pages of notes. I write short novels every morning, every single day. I am a wordy person. I am filled with words, prolific, if you will. Oh, man. God, I don't know how many pages of notes total I've done with all these slate breakdowns. Anyway, all right, enough about the notes and the quantity of notes. I got to read them to you because this is the important stuff. Let's jump into the player breakdown and figure out who we love in NFL Week 3 main slate. Who do you love? Okay, starting with the signal callers, quarterbacks this week. Your highest priced quarterbacks are Tommy Brady and Aaron Rodgers, who are both home favorites. For me, I think it sets up a little bit better for Aaron Rodgers. He's got Cincinnati at home. He is a home favorite. The reason being is that I think the Patriots in positive game script are going to hammer the run. I really do. And I think that the Houston defense probably as a unit is more effective than the Cincinnati defense, even though the Cincinnati pass defense has been very efficient this year. So for me, it's Rodgers at home versus Cincinnati. You can't go wrong with either of them, but I prefer Aaron Rodgers. He's +3 above projections with a 60% consistent rate in his career when he's a home favorite. You know he's going to get you 20 points. I mean, that is kind of the Aaron Rodgers floor. Everything flows through him. They are a pass-driven offense. Cincinnati's defense has been good thus far, though. 13 FanDuel points to wide receivers and 12 points to QB through 2 weeks of the season. But let's pump the brakes on crowning Cincinnati as a defensive stalwart of the AFC. Because, listen, the Ravens ran it down their throat and controlled that game early and often via the turnover, via the defense, via the run game. Didn't do anything. So they didn't have to throw it. Okay. Game two, they play Houston in an absolute stinker. Houston's offense has looked brutal and they shut down Deshaun Watson in the pass game. I mean, they played an injured Joe Flacco who only threw the ball 19 times and still had a touchdown. And then they played Deshaun Watson, who has some issues as a quarterback in the NFL. I've been kind of saying that. Like I liked him at Clemson. And trust me, I was rooting for Clemson to beat Alabama, but I don't know if he's gonna make it as a franchise quarterback the way the Houston Texans want him to. Packers implied for 26 points. If you add that statistic to that trend that I was talking about with A-Rod as a home favorite here, he averages 24 points in that trend, 65% consistency. I mean, what's not to like about Aaron Rodgers here? The good news is Randall Cobb is likely a go. The shoulder MRI revealed nothing serious. It's just pain, so he is going to be able to suit up on Sunday. Jordy day-to-day, but it's a soft tissue injury in the quad. We'll see. You know, that's good. I'm going to be completely honest. I thought it was a knee. I thought it was a meniscus or like something that like just kind of popped in that knee that he did. I thought for sure it was, but it's not. It's a soft tissue injury. He is considered day to day. Time on, totally cruising. Packers pass rush, very solid. They should limit Cincinnati's ability to be super effective, even though their pass defense is not very good. Their pass rush is good, top nine in hurries and sacks. So you get Rodgers, who's third in adjusted yards per attempt, a metric. This is one of football's advanced metrics, by the way. They don't have a lot of weighted metrics like baseball, but adjusted yards per attempt is a weighted passing metric that accounts for passes that result in TDs. Rodgers was number one last year in adjusted yards per attempt and interceptions. So you get more points for plays that end in touchdowns and fewer points for plays that end in interceptions, if that makes sense. It's like WOBA or ISO in Major League Baseball, right? Where certain, singles, doubles, triples are weighted differently as far as that goes. So Rodgers third in adjusted yards per attempt. We know he's up there in passer rating, top 12 in the league. He's safe. I think the thing that I kind of like is that with tons of cheaper quarterback options, I think that people are going to have a propensity to go down in quarterback. And I know a lot of people love saying cash game quarterbacks, you don't have to pay because it's the most consistent range of outcomes. I understand that. But I think that there's also leverage in getting the massive floor that a guy like Aaron Rodgers offers on a weekly basis. We saw it from Tommy Brady. There are only so many quarterbacks that can go for 30 points. Aaron Rodgers is one of them. I think one of those guys that people are going to be really interested in is Cam Newton versus New Orleans. The world loves this, and I think it is viable. That is as far as I will go. I just don't know how much I like it. Listen, 2 weeks through the season, he's got a 61% completion rate. He's a total of a 53% rate this year. Excuse me. 53% completion rate on the season, I believe. He's only rushed for 19 yards and 5 attempts per game, so we knew that that was down. They want to protect him. They've been running the ball very, very consistently. Plenty of touches for Stewart, plenty of touches for McCaffrey. No Greg Olsen in the lineup, which does shift the passing attack to, I think, some other pieces. Which is good for the skill position players. Funches and McCaffrey specifically, I think, are interesting to me. And he gets the Saints at home. I mean, there's a lot to like here. Don't get me wrong. Saints pass defense, worst in the league in efficiency, allowing 28 points per game to the quarterback and 396 yards per game, 3 touchdowns per game. I mean, the numbers are insane. The Saints continue to just hemorrhage points as a defense. It's absolutely terrible that Drew Brees has wasted all these seasons behind one of the worst defenses in the league. It makes me mad to think about what Drew Brees could have been if he had a decent defensive unit behind him. So Cam does have a floor here. 2016, he had one monster game of 28 points, but then he had one mediocre game at home against the Saints of 12 points. You know, there is reason to like him, okay? There's definitely reason to like him. There's definitely reason to think Cam gets me 18 fantasy points. You know, almost 300 yards, 200 plus yards passing, and a touchdown or two. The question is whether or not they get ahead in game script, and then they just run the ball with Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey. There is a rapport, though, with his receivers, and here's the pecking order. Kelvin Benjamin, 23%. Christian McCaffrey, 21%, and Devin Funchess with 16% target share for each of them. Now, Funchess and McCaffrey trending in the right direction, and I think personally that they are more reliable targets. Their catch rate is better. Their passer rating on targets is better than Kelvin Benjamin's. I like Cam a lot. Don't get me wrong. I like rooting for him. I just don't love him, especially knowing that this defense has been phenomenal and they could get a lead and try to play keep away with Drew Brees. I don't know. I'm not going to overstate my love, but I wanted to talk about him at 8,100 because I think that a lot of people really like him. Matt Stafford versus Atlanta and Matt Ryan. Now, here are two guys that in that price range that I prefer by a wide margin to Cam Newton. Even though Cam's awesome, Cam's matchup is excellent, I think I'd rather get my exposure in Carolina via the skill position players rather than Cam. You know what I mean? Okay. So I think Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan, they just have massive ceilings. Listen, in week one as a home dog, Matty Snapback posted 28 fantasy points against an Arizona defense that is one of the most elite units on paper. Now, to this point, they have not been. They've been relatively inefficient, especially in the back half and in the secondary. He owns the league's third best passer rating. He's been throwing the ball in 63% of plays, which is well above the league average in game neutral situations. A 9.7 touchdown rate. Atlanta allowing a 59% success rate on targets to wide receivers, and the wide receiving core has some really great pieces. But they're also allowing Atlanta the highest number of targets to running back and tight end. Now, not nearly as successful as the targets that are going to the wide receiver. But I think the thing that we notice here is Stafford is going to be able to feel comfortable playing out of the shotgun as he does in three wide receiver sets with a running back there, that kind of pro set formation. That we saw it, you know. I mean, they feel perfectly fine giving him five different reads in a passing game, and they did it in the Giants game, they did it in the Cardinals game. He can spread the ball around this week, keep it moving down the field against an Atlanta defense that really is not that threatening. Matty Ice, listen, he's fourth in passer rating, favored on the road for 29 fantasy points. In that situation, he's averaged 18 FanDuel points. I don't think who plays Matt Ryan in this situation? I don't think anybody does. I think Matt Ryan goes completely overlooked. The Detroit defense, very solid this far, fourth in total efficiency, and I think the Falcons definitely have the weapons to do damage and kind of knock that metric down. I mean, we saw how bad the Giants were in pass protection. Ezekiel Ansah just mauled, absolutely mauled Ereck Flowers. They had no answer for the pass rush. Eli, it's like tackling a dummy. And they just took away the passing options. There's no run game whatsoever. He did it against Arizona, but of course Arizona reeling after David Johnson goes down in the second half. The Detroit defense is not the same unit as last year. That's what I will say. They are better, but the Atlanta offense is still a top five unit. We'll see how the year plays out. Definitely a top five unit in the league. So I think this game stays close. I think these quarterbacks are forced to throw. They're in a dome. They're comfortable. It sets up really nicely for both of them. And Matt Ryan is 8,500. Matt Stafford, 79. The battles of the Matty Mats. I kind of wish this was like a DK pitcher situation. You could roster both of them and just let them go back and forth and back and forth. I love it. Anyway, I think if you want to go to value, going to be Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is going to be very popular against Oakland, as he should be. You know, you got to like a home dog in this situation because home dogs actually provide a lot of value, believe it or not. Negative game script creates quarterback value. They exceed expectations and projections, and they usually go overlooked because people prefer rostering favorites and winning quarterbacks. It's not necessarily always correlated to fantasy. Well, it is correlated to fantasy value. I'm sorry. That's not fair. But there is something to be said for negative game script. Oakland has forced quarterbacks in negative game script twice this year. That I said twice like it was a huge number. It's not a huge number. Twice this year. Averaging 32 and a half attempts. Marcus Mariota threw the ball 40 times against this defense. And Josh McCown threw the ball, I believe, 28 times against this defense, if that's correct. 24 times, 20, 24 times against this defense, and two touchdowns. They've accounted. So the Oakland offense forces opposite teams into throwing because the Oakland offense is so potent. They have so many skill position players that are weapons. I think the Washington O-line is part of the plus of this situation here, playing very well. In the run game, they've owned the point of attack. They're tops in power rank, top three in open field rank. It's going to help them sustain drives. Listen, I know that Rob Kelly may not play, but I still think that the combination of Chris Thompson and Samaje Perine been very inefficient, but I think if you get him volume, you're going to see the athleticism and the pedigree pop. I mean, you saw him in Oklahoma. If you saw him at Oklahoma, you knew this is a man. This dude has stuff. He's a beast. And he was dominant in Oklahoma. You know, kind of guy who can absorb contact, stay on his feet, and run through traffic. Now, Rob Kelly, though, just Fat Rob. He's the man. You got to love Fat Rob. If you want to trade me Fat Rob in season long, I'd consider it. I love that guy. So anyway, we're talking about Kirk Cousins, not Fat Rob. Kirk Cousins, though, behind improved offensive line play. They've limited sacks, only a 4% sack rate for them. They're home dogs. It's just, I think this is a good opportunity for Kirk Cousins to outperform what seems to be like kind of a people thinking it's a down year for him. They're going to have to throw the ball. They did so 70% of the time. He threw the ball 40 times in week one when they were trailing against Philadelphia. Don't think that just because they didn't throw the ball last week that they're not going to throw the ball. If they're going to want to run the ball, but I think the run sets up the pass, and especially in this matchup against Oakland, could be a high-scoring game. You got to love that. Highest total on the slate, by the way, 54 points. Now, DeShone Kizer is another name. It's notable. I just want to throw him out there. Rushed 5 times a game. Created a lot of value with his legs. He's thrown a massive number of interceptions. He's been sacked 12 times because the kid holds on to the ball like he's in the backyard. And, you know, Indianapolis's pass defense, however, ranked 27th in efficiency, massive success rates to the tight end and the wide receiver thus far. Yes, Corey Coleman is out, but Rashad Higgins profiles as kind of a beast, and he took 11 targets and was perfectly effective in there. It's a real bummer that they don't have both. I mean, you could have a legitimate passing attack with both of them. You know, they've allowed 17 FanDuel points to the position through 2 weeks to Jared. I love this. Jared, I'm probably a bust Goff, and Carson, me and Eli should retire Palmer. So if you think DeShone Kizer has, you know, 40 yards rushing, 200 yards passing, and a touchdown in him, you kind of like it. You kind of like it if you're a paid down for quarterback kind of guy. All right, running back, here we go. Eating the chalk, the chalkity chalk chalk, Lev Bell. It's time. It is time for Le'Veon Bell to get into the end zone and play dice amongst his fellow Steelers like they did last week, which I thought Roger Goodell, man, that Roger Goodell turns off the TV, throws his remote in the pool, and smashes glasses. No one speak to him anymore. I allowed group celebrations for this shit. Yeah, Roger Goodell. Listen, these guys are playing dice in the end zone. Suck it. he's been the Bears offense. Listen, they're not going to be able to stay on the field, okay? They just can't. They're not productive. They're not successful. Lev Bell's been phenomenal on the road historically where Big Ben struggles. He's been a plus asset for the Steelers on the road. He's getting 83% of the team's snaps. Last week, it was up above the 90% mark. He saw 30 opportunities then. He has not been massively efficient, but I think, you know, what you probably see is, okay, a lack of preseason, a lack of football. You know, they feel comfortable with giving him the ball now. He's seen 3 red zone opportunities in the last year. A ton of targets, too. I mean, the floor just goes way up knowing how many passes he's capable of catching. The Bears allowed rushing TDs on back-to-back weeks to Freeman, and then again last week to Jaquizz Rodgers, who, you know, Freeman didn't really blow up, but the point being is that the Bears are not completely immune to good rushers, and I think Le'Veon Bell will be far and away the best rusher that they have seen. One thing I don't love is that this surface is slow. This is the slowest surface probably in in the NFL. So you don't love the explosive factor here. You prefer them to be at home and in Three Rivers or in a dome or something like that. But the Steelers offense probably they shouldn't have a problem sustaining drives. You know, they got a 40% first down. The Bears allowed a 40% first down rate on passing plays and a 26th in success rate to wide receivers. That means this. Third down really isn't a big deal. they're going to be able to sustain drive, create opportunities, get into the red zone, and, hammer the ball home with Lev Bell. So I think he will come highly owned, but I think he is totally worth it. There are two backs, however, in the 8Ks that I am kind of in love with as a person and as a fantasy analyst. Kareem Hunt, 8,700 or 8,300. I don't know. I can't remember. For whatever reason, I forget to write down prices sometimes. I said Hunt, listen, I said yesterday he might be a viable fade, thinking about the Chargers defense and look at some of their metrics. But then I realized that I lied to you all. I was trying to get cute. There's no reason to get cute, man. You see the numbers on the Kansas City offensive line. They are number one in the rush attack, currently with 8 yards per attempt, number one in power, number three in stuffed rate, number one in second level rate, and number one in open field rank. Oh my God. Are you kidding me? He has a 50% success rate on rushing attempts, and Hunt has seen above 50% success rate on rushing attempts, and Hunt has seen 3 red zone opportunities a game, 1.5 inside the 5 goal line carries in both games, 5, and owns an 80% success rate on those carries. Drool. Commence the drooling. He's getting at least 15 carries a game, 4 targets a game for 60-plus yards in the passing game. Of course, now we've seen some of those be just explosive pass plays that, you know, he breaks wide open. But that's what he brings to the table. He's taking balls to the house on the regular. He's broken the most tackles in football, according to Pro Football Focus. He's at one of the highest elusive ratings. He had it in college, and then he had it again. I saw this on Scott Barrett's Twitter. He tweeted out, Kareem Hunt forced missed tackles and had the highest elusive rating of percentage in college in 2016 in NCAA. Then he quoted that tweet and he said, in 2017 in the NFL, Kareem Hunt has the highest number of broken tackles and the highest elusive rating in the NFL through 2 weeks. I mean, this guy is built to be a bell cow. He is a beast. The Chargers have been effective through 2 weeks. They're 13th in DVOA as a team. But listen to the numbers. 99 total yards for scrimmage for C.J. Anderson, who that offensive line is still not that great. Their grades aren't that good. C.J.'s been very effective. He looks healthy and wonderful, and I'm very happy for him. I wish he had done this last year when I had C.J. Anderson in multiple season-long teams, but he didn't. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to just cry a little bit and walk away. And then in week 2, 122 rushing yards to Jay, I'm the man, Ajayi, who, speaking of Jay Ajayi, probably will be my favorite running back on the week, 8,200. He is going to the New York Jets. How do you not want a running back with a 94% snap share in week 1 and 30 touches straight out of the gate? These are Lev Bell, David Johnson type numbers of involvement, and I think Gase has no issue feeding Jay Ajayi, and he has no issue just hammering the ball against the Jets. Oh my God. They've allowed 5+ yards per carry in the A gap. That's where Ajayi got his touches, got 52% of his touches against the Chargers, a much better defense. They've gotten gashed for over 6 rushes of 10+ yards. They're 27th in rushing efficiency and 29th in passing efficiency. So Smoke and Jay should be able to just pound cigs in the huddle, stamp them out, and huck balls to Devontae Parker. Gosh, that sounds fun. Let's go Dolphins. Let's go Smoke and Jay. Let's go Jay Ajayi. The numbers don't stop there for the Jets. Averaged 137 rushing yards and 1.5 touchdowns, totaling 32 fantasy points per game. McCoy gashed them. Marshawn Lynch got into the end zone, but only in 15 carries, and then they gave up a shit ton of production to Rashard and Washington. The Dolphins are going to be in positive game script here. They're going to feed Ajayi. I love him so much. Love him, love him, love him. It's very hard for me to decide of those three. Well, I mean, and not even gotten to my other these other guys. I love all these guys too. Running back is loaded this week. Like, pay for running backs. Pay for them. Don't try to get cute. The wide receiver is stacked with value. Just be cute there. Don't be cute with running backs. Listen, Mike Gillisley and Ty Montgomery, here are your home favorites. Two of the guys who are getting some of the most volume in the league on two of the best offenses in the league. Two indicators that we always want. Home favorite, productive passing offense, high totals, check, check, check. Are they getting opportunities? Check, check, check. All of these things. I mean, I wish I could play all five of these running backs this week. Mike Gillisley is probably not going to. Who's going to play Mike Gillisley? I am, but not everybody is. The Pats have been hammering the run, 50% run rate, and it sails up to 64% once they cross into the red zone. They've run the most plays in the NFL because they are the most efficient offense in the NFL. And that offensive line has allowed 4.5 yards per play. That is first in the NFL. They are extremely efficient. Gillisley's going to see plenty of volume as a home favorite here. He's going to get into the red zone. He's going to get scoring opportunities. And he has the highest red zone and rushing success rate on the slate. Not kidding. Not kidding. I'm not kidding. Mike Gillisley, highest red zone success rate on the slate. He's getting at least one opportunity inside the five per game. We saw him with 3 touchdowns in week 1. We saw him with a touchdown and plenty of touches in week 2. His role is clear. He is the LeGarrette Blount power back, and he's doing a great job. He's doing fine. Houston, not good. They're not going to stay on the field. The defensive pedigree is there, but this team, come on, they got gashed in week 1 by the Jags. They ran the ball down their throat. Leonard Fournette in his rookie debut goes 30 touches and 125 yards and a touchdown. I don't know if they're actually that good of a defense. And then what do they do against Tom Brady? It's not like they can stack the ball. So Bill is going to own this game. O'Brien is toast. They stomped him last year even without Brady. Remember that? Yeah, I do. Tymon, he's the other home favorite. Ridiculously good price for a guy who's getting 20 opportunities a game, a 94% snap share, 5.2 yards per touch. What? 5.2 yards per touch? That means as soon as this guy, if he touches the ball 5 times, 20 times a game, he's going to have 100 yards pretty much every time. And it's because of his ability in the open field as a pass catcher. We saw it in the Atlanta game. He can create big plays out of the backfield there. And he's huge. And he's in the open field. And he just has this wonderful balance of power and speed. I love him. One goal line opportunity per game as a home favorite. He's had 3 touchdowns on the year as a home favorite against a defense that has been solid against the pass, but mediocre against the rush. And let's be very clear about this. Mediocre against the rush. Lamar Miller, Dante Foreman both had above average success rates against them last week. And then in week 1, they didn't have to do, Baltimore didn't have to do anything except for run the ball. Javorius Allen and Terrence West got like 40 total touches in that week. I love it. Through the air, they've allowed a 54% success rate to running backs targets, which is 20% worse than Atlanta last week. Now, Atlanta does allow volume to the running backs, but it just, you have to like Ty Montgomery. This is what's so exciting. I don't know who to deal with. I mean, listen, Ty Montgomery, home favorite, Mike Gillisley, home favorite to the best offenses in the league. Kareem Hunt, fade at your own risk. Because if he takes another one to the house, you're just going to be going, I knew he was good. I know how good he is. Why did I not play him? Lev Bell against the Bears? The Bears? Come on, man. Le'Veon Bell against the Bears, and then Jay Ajayi against the Jets? Does it get better than that? I mean, there's 5 running backs that are viable on this slate. If you're playing on DK and you want to be different, pay for 3 running backs through your three. Pay for all 3 of them. 1, 2, 3, and in the flex. Like, do it. Do it. Do it. All right. Now, if you want to get cute, You want to have some fun, especially on DK. I think these guys are a little bit more viable because you got your two good pass catching backs in two great spots, and Theo Riddick and Christian McCaffrey. Listen, I mentioned this earlier. Atlanta hasn't allowed a massive success rate on running back receptions, but they're allowing 32 fantasy points. Sometimes the success rates don't always match up with the fantasy stats, and you got to find these gaps. 32 fantasy points to the game, the running back in the last 2 weeks, mostly through the air. 10 targets to the running back, 9 receptions, and 70-plus yards allowed for Atlanta. 92-plus yards allowed for New Orleans. If you're going to tell me that Christian McCaffrey is going to possibly be lining up for catching 9 balls and 90 yards, he is a must-have. He is a must-have. How is he not? It's time. It's time for McCaffrey. Listen, they've both allowed passing touchdowns to the running back, both defenses. Riddick in negative game script, possibly because Atlanta isn't the lead. He probably can see volume. He did in week one. He saw 7 targets when they were trailing to Arizona in the second half. 6 receptions, touchdown. You're playing a wide receiver here. This is the way I think about this. The way I think about these guys is I think about them as wide receivers. And I think that that's probably the way that you should think about them at their price point. Now, that's why they're ideal possible plays for the flex position. But I think that you won't be the only one on DK that goes, look how smart I am. I'm going to play a running back who catches passes in the flex position because DraftKings is a PPR site. Surprised you didn't know that. I think there's opportunity costs on FanDuel. They're not my favorite. I will go with the other 5 guys on FanDuel unless it's a tournament stack. And I think McCaffrey for me edges out Riddick. And that's partially because Amir Abdullah looked good, real good. I talked to you guys about that. Amir Abdullah's got pop. He has open field speed. You know, listen, if the Lions want to say, hey, Theo, thanks a lot, man. You've been great. You've been great, but we're going to mostly go with Amir this year because he's really fast. I wouldn't blame him. So McCaffrey to me is very interesting. 16 opportunities per game. That way outdoes Theo Riddick. 3 in the red zone this year. Okay. We know he would have scored last week. It would have changed the whole narrative on Christian McCaffrey. And everybody would have been like, oh yeah, Christian McCaffrey against the Saints. He scored that touchdown last week. He's at a 75% catch rate with one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in football. That's pretty fucking good. Okay. He's a home favorite and he's applied for over 26 points. I think McCaffrey edges out Riddick for me, but I had to mention Riddick because, you know, hashtag process. Wide receivers. A.J. Green will be the chalkity chalk, sidewalk chalk, A.J. Green. The wide receiver 1 against the Packers, it's going to be the chalk until further notice. Last week it was Julio, this week it's an unbelievably cheap A.J. Green who has underperformed. It's not really his fault. Blame the Red Rocket. Green has seen an average of 30% target share in 2017, 9 targets per game with Dalton. Green Bay ranking 28th in DVOA to wide receiver 1, aligning exactly with what we saw last year. Thank God for Demarius Randall and who's that other guy? 70% of pass attempts have gone to the wide receiver in matchups against Green Bay. Coordinators know it. Quarterbacks know it. The game plan is get the ball to your wideouts when you're playing the Packers. Green is going to get plenty of targets. Listen, Bill Lazor's the new OC, okay? And Zampezi... yeah, he's done. I don't know. He's out. And there was no love lost. There was a Cincinnati. I typed in offensive coordinator Bill Lazor trying to read the news blurb to see if there was any fantasy angles on it. Read the news about Lazor while I was doing my notes. And there was a Cincinnati blog that quoted a fan that said, I mostly come to football games just to get drunk. But I will say that Ken Zampezi was total trash. So anything in a new direction is a good idea. I was like, well, there's your analysis. That's great. Thank you, people of Cincinnati. Anyway, he fed Jarvis Landry. He was in charge of Jarvis Landry's breakout in 2015. Okay. Now that whole staff got fired. He did get fired, so take that with a grain of salt. But he was in charge of Jarvis Landry's 1,000-yard season in 2015. 7-plus targets with 10 yards per catch in that season. Listen, the issue with Cincinnati is and will be the offensive line. They've allowed a 10.9 adjusted sack rate, according to Fantasy Football Outsiders. It's 29th in pass protection. They are bad. Who's worse, the Giants or the Bengals? I don't know, but maybe we should just put them both. So like the Bengals and the Giants get 10 offensive linemen total against the defense. You just mix them together so that they can make one decent offensive line. And the Packers pass rush is sneaky good. That's what they do. They pin those ear backs and they send those edge rushers. That's what they're good at. So I think Andy Dalton will be on his back a little bit here, but not without having thrown the ball to AJ Green, like somewhere close to 10 times. I like Antonio Brown. Now I think Julio goes higher on because he has the higher total. And I don't love that Antonio Brown is on the road and the Ben Roethlisberger splits on the road is a thing. And Antonio Brown suffers there. It's a slow surface. But listen to this. He's easier to project in my mind. And the reason is that the Bears defense has been a glaring problem for them in the secondary. They're allowing the 26th highest success rate to wideouts this year. They've been decently stout against the run, like not a massive success rate against the run. Stopping the run has been a focus of John Fox. Passer rating of nearly 130 on average on deep routes over the right in the middle side of the formation with a 67% success rate. That's not good. That's not good. So Kyle Fuller seems to be doing a decent job, but the opposite side with what's his name? I can't remember his name. It is the other corner. Marcus Cooper. That's the one. Marcus Cooper, not very good. Marcus Cooper has been not that good of late. So we know Antonio moves around. We know we'll see him in the slot. We know they'll try to basically find different spots for him to, you know, line up everywhere. But he is, you know, splitting out to the right on 37% of routes. Okay, so 37% of routes he is going to be running against Marcus Cooper and out of the slot too. Like they'll just jump him around in formation and force the Bears. And if for whatever reason Lev Bell doesn't succeed, then I think Antonio Brown is the volume hog that we love to see. Even against Minnesota, he saw a massive number of targets. He just didn't have he didn't catch them all. Okay, he averaged 11 targets this year per game, 31% target share. I mean, we saw Mike Evans last week. Very successful, you know, dropped a touchdown against this team. I think Antonio Brown could have a very solid floor day for you in this matchup with Chicago. And I find him easier to project than Julio. The reason that I find him easier to project than Julio is this, and I'm not saying stay away from Julio, because if that game shoots out, it's in a dome. That game, Julio Jones is going to have a game, and that there could be 40 pass attempts on both sides of the ball. And Julio Jones in a dome, on the road, in clutch situations, there's only one person that Matt Ryan's throwing the ball to, baby, and it is the big fella. He's going to play well, but he hasn't passed 5 receptions this year. But, of course, we know on 5 receptions he can go for 100-and-some-odd yards, hyper-efficient. He's got a tougher matchup, though, in Detroit. I mean, we saw what the Detroit did to the passing game of the Giants. Now, the passing game in the Giants is, but the Lions have been very solid on the back half of this. The secondary has been really good. He only has one red zone target, no touchdowns. I just think the volume for Brown, the matchup for Brown, easier to project than Julio's matchup, even though Julio has the, you know, better surface possibly in Detroit. I do love the turf for Julio. Now, if you want to pivot, I know a lot of people are talking about DeAndre. Nuke is nice. Okay. The volume is just insanity. Like I said this before, Deshaun Watson and him, they're the only ones on the field. They're dancing. They are doing their thing. But I think you be careful what you wish for. He is getting so, so many targets. But he has struggled with efficiency because Watson has struggled with his completion rate and his reads. He's getting the pats this week. He's probably going to get bracketed in coverage, and they'll just take him away. They'll say, Lamar Miller, do your best. Which I'm laughing because I am not a Lamar Miller guy. I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm just not. Anyway, I liked him in Miami, but they were right to sell him. I think Belichick of course, the whole world talks about Bill Belichick knows how to take away your offense's number one asset. DeAndre Hopkins is going to struggle this week. Like, turn on ESPN. That's what you'll hear. They're going to try to keep him out of this game, okay? But Watson is going to force the ball to him, and he has had some tough secondary matchups in Jacksonville and Cincinnati. This is not Jacksonville and Cincinnati. The New England pass defense has allowed at least 33 points to the wide receiver in two games. However, you have to be careful while you read that stat. We're talking about Drew Brees and Alex Smith in the game of his life. Drew Brees' floor at home, super high. Tons of points for his wide receivers, right? Especially a negative game script. Tons of passing and receiving touchdowns. Alex Smith plays the greatest game he's ever played, throws two touchdowns that are way over the top. I just don't know that this is exactly what we expect from this New England pass defense. Going home, you know Belichick is going to want to shore that up. The floor is there for Hopkins because he's going to see 10-plus targets, and he has some of the most talent in the league. He's going to get separation. He's going to catch the ball. The issue is that I worry that Watson can't make any good reads because Belichick just throws the book at the rookie. He just goes, stunt here, fake there, cover there, and he's not going to be able to see shit. That's what scares me. I'm scared of Bill Belichick and Deshaun Watson because Bill Belichick wins that fight every single time. So that concerns me. I think there's guys in that price range that I'm more interested in too. I mean, T.Y. Hilton is down there against a bad Browns secondary at home. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders have been lights out lately. They're getting the Bills, who have been decent, but Trevor Siemian is the best quarterback in the NFL. We all know that. It's documented. I'm kidding. He just has a lot of fantasy points right now. But Demaryius Thomas and Manny Sanders, we know you can kind of split the difference with those two twinsies, eight targets, you know, almost 100 yards every single week. Either one of them is fine. In fact, I had a really hard time finishing my notes and not talking about them against the Bills because you saw Funches and Kelvin Benjamin put up serviceable lines in that first game or in that second game. And Cam Newton is not the quarterback that Trevor Siemian is right now. And this is not the same offense. So I think the Bills could struggle with Thomas and Sanders. Even Doug Baldwin. I mean, eventually Seattle has to be able to try to... God, I don't even know if I want to say it. I mean, Seattle has to be better than this, right? Are they? And Tennessee funnel defense allowing a lot of production to the wide receiver. So you got to think Doug Baldwin and Paul Richardson do something. And so Doug Baldwin, I don't know. He's hard to project, but, those guys may be even more appealing to me than DeAndre Hopkins. But I'll go through some more guys that I like even more than Hopkins. By the way, he's the same price as AJ Green. That's kind of complicated, isn't it? You know what I mean? Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, and Kenny Stills. You have three wide receiver spots on your fantasy team. Roster all three of them. I'm kidding, but maybe I'm not. Parker, Landry, so appealing. Parker saw 26% market share from Jay in week two, 171 air yards. Are you kidding me? An average depth of target of 19? Oh, gosh. That's fantasy gold. He's going to get the Jets. We know they have allowed plenty of scoring to the wide receiver. Jarvis Landry exploded last week. 15 targets in week two, 44% market share. He caught 13 of them because he catches everything. You know, he's like an Odell South. same haircut, worse quarterback, but the same average depth of target, like 2 yards, and then he just runs as fast as he can on the slant routes. A ton of underneath routes. Jay was dumping it right there. We know Jay will zero in on guys and then just every once in a while take a big shot. So this is a great spot for Jay and the pass catchers. Parker, we got to think about the matchups here. Parker lining up on the left, a little bit tougher. Now, he is going to get Morris Claiborne, very solid in 2016, but the Jets have allowed an above average passer rating on that side. Crabtree was very successful over there. So I think if you get Parker in single coverage, he's not going to see Claiborne in three wide receiver sets. So that's what's interesting to me. Claiborne may flank out on Stills in three wide receiver sets, which kind of actually makes me a little bit more worried about Stills. But I think that Landry has a great matchup too. Buster Screen, pretty juicy. If he sees the volume he did last week, it's an excellent play, especially DK, PPR value. I mean, good gracious. If you could get 10 receptions, love it. Stills is very interesting. High risk, high reward. Massive return on a very, very low salary. Big play potential. His floor is scary, but he has a massive average depth of target, 17 yards. He had a 23-yard average depth of target. 17 yards per reception. He's incredibly cheap. He's a great tournament punt. I mean, this guy thrives on small number of targets that go deep for touchdowns. He is one of the best adjusted yards per target in the league because he takes balls to the house. He did it with Tannehill last year. So I think Parker, it goes for me, Parker, Landry, Stills, that's the order. I think that's where I want to be. I mean, it's Ajayi over both of them. Yeah, Ajayi. Ajayi's my favorite Dolphin. That's a really funny sentence. Just say that sentence just alone. Not in the context of football. Ajayi is my favorite Dolphin. Sounds like an interesting cartoon character. Ajayi the Dolphin. Keenan Allen, 7,200. It is so hard to write notes about projectable wide receivers that you like on a week-to-week basis and not include Keenan Allen. It's just so hard to argue with these things. Volume in the last 2 weeks, catch rate, and we've seen this matchup against Kansas City be productive. Just last week, Alshon Jeffrey lining up on the left side of the formation went ham against this team. He got huge volume. We know that they are home dogs against Kansas City. They need a win. This is a divisional matchup that's very important for them. Listen, he is not going to see Marcus Peters. He is going to see Philip Gaines in the slot. He's a massive advantage there. He's 27% of the team's targets and the 27% of their yardage, like passing yardage, 70% catch rate. He's still 7,200. We saw him get 10 targets against Denver. We saw 10 targets against Miami. There's no reason to believe that he does not get 10 targets here in this one as well. Philip Gaines plus matchup, a 36 Pro Football Focus grade over 2 years. Come on, man. It's so hard not to like Keenan Allen. They've allowed 32 fantasy points to the wide receiver through 2 games on the season. Alshon went ham. We saw Amendola do good work out of the slot in game one. We saw, there's a lot to be, there's the Kansas City defense as a unit is effective. The Kansas City defense is not immune to fantasy production. That's how I'll say it. I'm not playing Melvin Gordon. But I am interested in Keenan Allen here, especially if this team is trailing and you get Phillip Rivers just checking out of every single run play and just going, I'm slinging it, baby. Give me my bolo tie. You know, my 13 kids are in the stands. I'm going to start throwing the ball to Keenan Allen on every single play. Let's go. I don't want the kicker to have to ruin this for us again. All right, moving on down. We got one hot pick from my man Brian Jester over there at Occupy Fantasy, www.occupyfantasy.com. Brian launching an extremely user-friendly model. Follow him at Brian Jester FF. Brian's got one that may fly a little bit under the radar, so let's hear from him right now about my friend, DeSean Jackson.
This is Brian Jester, co-founder at OccupyFantasy.com, here with one of the top plays for Week 3 from our Occupy motto. Wide receiver DeSean Jackson is super cheap this week, $4,600 on DraftKings, just $6,400 on FanDuel. Jackson draws a top 20 cornerback matchup this week against the Vikings' Trey Waynes. Last week, Waynes allowed a 51-yard reception to Martavis Bryant and was later flagged for defensive pass interference on another huge play down the field. In Week 2, DeSean Jackson averaged 19.3 air yards per target, good for fifth in the league. Jameis Winston just missed him on two throws in the end zone against the Bears. Had they connected for just one, Jackson would be a lot more expensive and a lot higher owned this week. For more top plays, check out the Occupy model and the daily plug at OccupyFantasy.com.
Dang, I love that call. It's so true. I mean, all of those things are exactly spot on. He caught a touchdown. It was 1 foot out of bounds. Winston's looking for him, no doubt about it. It is going to be a thing this year. And Trey Waynes got burned by Martavis Bryant. Now, Martavis has his size advantage on virtually everyone in the league, but you have to love the matchup, the ability to stretch the field on turf for DeSean Jackson. Clearly, it's part of their scheme. So, a very good call. Like I said, at Brian Jester FF, he's going to be chiming in to the player breakdown, giving you guys some top plays every single week. So check that out, OccupyFantasy.com. Value tier below $6,000, Devin Funchess. Well, sorry, I can't talk about Devin Funchess unless I talk about Kelvin Benjamin, because the whole world is going to be like, Kelvin Benjamin is the man. Devin Funchess is better at football. Facts. Devin Funchess has a better everything on Player Profiler. And Devin Funchess has a better matchup. So there's a lot of reasons to like Devin Funchess over Kelvin Benjamin. But I'll talk about Benjamin. He's been Cam's primary target, 23% of targets. He's got an ugly 50% catch rate, though. He can't catch balls in traffic. And a PFF contributor actually added this. The complicated part is that he has been Cam's preferred target on sacks and hurries. He's the one where he knows where Benjamin is and he feels comfortable heaving it up to him. Problem is I don't know how you take a quarterback with a 53% completion rate, you put him under pressure in the pocket, which, by the way, New Orleans isn't going to get a lot of pressure, but you put him under pressure and then you ask him to throw it to a guy who doesn't have particularly good hands. Not exactly a recipe for a fantasy explosion. Okay, he's going to get Marshawn Lattimore, who's been very solid. He's got an 82% PFF grade through 2 weeks in the season. He's been good. He shut down Brandon Cooks last week. He was very productive in his first matchup as well. We saw this. Somebody wrote him up on PFF, and they said, listen, this guy's actually pretty good. He's the only bright spot in the secondary. You put a decent corner on him. I don't love it. The lower-owned and cheaper guy in Devin Funchess, who's $4,800, he's getting PJ Williams because the other guy got hurt. They're all hurt. And Devontae Harris, these guys are brutal. They're below 40 on Pro Football Focus. Hogan took advantage of them last week. If Chris Hogan can do it, Devin Funchess can do it, guys. Funchess saw a bump in targets last week. He got 7 targets against a relatively competent Bills defense. He has the higher catch rate. He has the better He has the better production premium. He has the better yards per target. He has the better fantasy points per route. He has a lot of things going for him. Okay, he has pretty decent air yards. There's a lot to like about Funchess in this situation, specifically the fact that I think people will gravitate towards Benjamin, and I like him, but I think I like Funchess at 4,800 more. I think there's, for me, it's, there's something to like there. I like Devin Funchess more. I do. I just think he's a better wide receiver. So that's for me. That's my thing. All right, going up to the Detroit area, Galladay and Sanu. Love them both. Love them both. Gonna have tournament shares of both of them. I'm gonna have tournament shares of Mohamed Sanu until the public realizes that this guy is one of Matt Ryan's favorite targets and FanDuel. Well, he won't price bump really until FanDuel sees him score, but like he's great. Like he was, I had him Sunday night in one of my tournament lineups that was holding in cash, and he was so low owned. Every time I saw a reception, I was moving up in the world. Now, of course, Aaron Rodgers took care of any high quality return that I would have been seeing. Thanks a lot, Aaron Rodgers. Min cash will do fine. But Mohamed Sanu is great. But Kenny Galladay is going to match up. I did a profile on him. Robert Alford, okay? Here's the issue with Robert Alford. Solid coverage grade. Decent corner. Not bad. And in fact, the Atlanta secondary is not a terrible unit. We know that. However, Kenny Galladay is 6'4", 225. Robert Alford is 5'10", 195 pounds. There's a discrepancy there, okay? There is a discrepancy there that is massive. Atlanta has allowed production to come on the right side of the formation since 2016. They allowed 20 receiving touchdowns on that side of the formation. It's majority of their touchdowns right there. Galladay has a big playability that can win you a tournament. We saw it in week one. He's not in on a lot of formations. He's not going to get a massive amount of targets. But you have to know that with a guy with this many air yards, he's going to stretch the field. He is a tournament winner. He was in week one. He could be in week two. I really like his spot here. Now, Mohamed Sanu, I said, listen, quietly, 26% target share in one of the best passing offenses in the NFL. Highest catch rate on the Falcons. He's going to get Nevin Lawson and Quandre Diggs. There's a reason we were playing Larry Fitzgerald in all formats in week one, and the reason was called Quandre Diggs, okay? He was bad last year. Now, he's been playing better this year, and the whole secondary has been playing better this year. But Sanu's point per dollar value is just so easy to like. He's going to get volume because teams have to sell out to stop Julio Jones, and all Sanu does is play those underneath routes while Julio draws the safeties with him. It's great. It's great stuff. He gets single coverage. He doesn't do anything, you know, explosive, but he's still getting red zone looks. I still think that Sanu is a great, great play. Now, I'm not sure why I put Terrell Pryor's notes down here. It should have been in the middle section. And in fact, he's not a value wide receiver. He's much more of a mid-tier, moderate ownership pivot. I really like Terrell Pryor. 6,900. I don't know why he's last. Maybe he's saved the best for last. Terrell Pryor, listen, I think people are going to like him, though. I think it's going to be like a, Terrell Pryor sneaky. He's not going to be sneaky. He's in a good spot, okay? Listen, Oakland secondary, still not that great. They're average thus far, but they allowed a ton of volume to the Tennessee wideouts, and we saw them be successful. Corey Davis, very similar profile to Terrell Pryor as far as size. People forget how huge Terrell Pryor is. Corey Davis, 10 targets, 8 receptions in that game. We saw that. You got to think that Redskins are going to be a negative game script. The 54-point total, they threw the ball 40 times in week one against Philadelphia. I keep coming back to this. Like, volume is king for wide receivers. Terrell Pryor saw 11 targets. You mean to tell me he's going to get 11 targets from Kirk Cousins on Sunday night and they're trying to score? I'm taking that. I'm taking 11 targets. I love 11 targets at $6,900. He's gotten red zone opportunities in a couple games. He has a plus matchup with David Amerson. I don't know what else you need to tell. I don't know. You know, I mean, highest total on the slate, playing from behind. There's a lot of reason to like Terrell Pryor in this one. So that's the wide receiver pool. It's pretty big. Sorry for that. It includes, but is not limited to, AJ Green, Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, who I'm very careful about, and I put him in the same bucket as kind of tread lightly, T.Y. Hilton, Demaryius Thomas, Doug Baldwin, right? That's kind of the same bucket of there's a lot to like here, but it's hard to project. Fair. Okay. Parker, Landry, Stills, I like all the Dolphins this week. But my order of preference is exactly that, Parker Landry Stills. And Keenan Allen, the floor is like, it's like marble. It is a marble floor. It is solid and beautiful. Value wide receivers, Devin Funchess, I prefer over Kelvin Benjamin, especially at lower ownership. Sure, Kelvin Benjamin is big and all that good stuff, but Devin Funchess, I think he's going to have a better situation. And I would love to see Funchess outperform Kelvin Benjamin in tournaments. Kenny Golladay, Muhammad Sanu, love them both. That's going to be a great game if that game shoots out. These guys are tournament upside players that come with reduced ownership. Terrell Pryor, he probably shouldn't be down here at the bottom of the list, but you heard why I like him so much. Play from behind, volume, 11 targets. All right, moving on to the tight end. Tight end is very interesting this week. It is very interesting. I have more takes than I normally have for tight end. Now, if that's confounding and confusing, I apologize. You can fast forward through the tight end conversation. I love Travis Kelce, though, at 7,100. I love Travis Kelce. There's a new tool over at Sharp Football Stats, by the way. One of the greatest tools, one of the greatest resources for fantasy analysis on the internet, period. Just unbelievable, Sharp Football Stats. It shows success rate, offensive success rate against the defense, and how many targets. So how often does an offense target a certain position, and how successful are they at doing it? I think that this is a little bit more representative of scheme than fantasy points, because what you see is schematically offensive coordinators saying, oh, there's a flaw here in this defense. Let's attack it. That's great. That's what we want, right? They have a massive success rate to the tight end, the Chargers. 78% success rate. 76% of targets are going there. They've allowed 6 receptions and 68 yards per game. They're dead last in efficiency. And Travis Kelce is an animal. We saw him jump 15 yards into the end zone. He's amazing. I love this guy. Ertz, very much in play. We saw what Ebron was able to do on Monday night, and Ertz is pretty much Carson Wentz's favorite person in the world. I wouldn't be surprised if those guys are doing buddy stuff right now, like hanging out, singing in the car, or waiting for each other in the lobby of the Eagles practice facility. Like, dude, what are you doing? Where have you been? I'm coming. We're going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Yeah, that's Zach Ertz and Carson Wentz's relationship. They're like calling their wives and being like, I'm going to go out with Carson. I'll be home later. They're like besties. Eight targets, 90 yards for Ertz is pretty much a lock on a week-to-week basis. And the Giants are bad against the tight end. That's where they are. No doubt about it. Low-price guys, there's a couple. Jared Cook again. I'm sorry. I got to. Guess who's worse than the Chargers in defensive efficiency to the tight end? Higher success rate. Redskins. The Redskins allowing the most success to the position at 78%, 104 yards per game, and 13 fantasy points. We saw Zach Ertz dice them up in week two. And even Jared Goff went to his tight end in week two. Zach Ertz, week one. So I think Jared Cook, and because, listen, Chris Raybon tweeted this out earlier in the week. The Washington cornerbacks specifically, have been pretty solid at locking down pass catchers and not allowing massive fantasy production to those positions. They had one broken play to Nelson Aguilar, and that was it. They took care of, Alshon Jeffrey, and then didn't allow the Rams to do much except for, Todd Gurley, Todd Gurley in the pass game is an indication of the kind of space that Jared Cook is going to be working insofar as, the middle of the field, short underneath routes, intermediate routes, there is a lot of success to be had there for Jared Cook, especially if they take away Crabtree and Cooper. Jack Doyle. Great name. First of all, that's one thing I had to get out of the way. Cleveland has allowed the most fantasy points to the tight end through two games. Jack Doyle went 8 for 8 last week. That's pretty impressive. Be careful. Carson Wentz is going to call you and ask you to come over and hang out. Jacoby Brissett loves him. Loves him. He saw 20% of the team's targets last week. I think that, makes a lot of good sense. Jacoby Brissett, not particularly good at throwing the football, so he's going to take the easiest path, the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance is named Jack Doyle over the middle. He's got good hands. He's been very productive. So I think that you could see that be another spot with Cleveland in back-to-back weeks. Jesse James torched them. Ben Watson torched them. Now Jack Doyle has an opportunity to torch the Cleveland Browns' hopes and dreams of being a road favorite. Defense, Denver, Carolina, basically Buffalo couldn't score. You know, Denver shut down the Cowboys. LeSean McCoy, what is he going to do? They give him the Ezekiel Elliott treatment. Jordan Matthews isn't a thing. He's not going to be a thing against Aqib Talib. That's for sure. There's no Dez Bryant, and Tyrod Taylor, we know, is a moderately inefficient quarterback. I think that the Denver defense on the road is one worth paying up for. I don't know, you know, how many takeaways are they going to have? I don't know, but I know that they are going to have a really safe floor and they will probably get to the quarterback. Low cost defense. I love Philadelphia against the Giants, mostly because Eric Flowers is still playing. Philadelphia also getting to the quarterback. They've gotten some serious sacks. I think they are they're above double digit sacks already this year. So you get a team that allows one of the worst sack rates in the NFL in the Giants in Philadelphia, who has actually been a pretty decent pass rush. Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that. They are min price, I believe. It worries me it's a divisional matchup. Yes, Odell Beckham being a little bit more healthy worries me. But listen, no one can run the ball. Eli Manning is a tackling dummy, and I can probably beat Eric Flowers on the edge. That was me doing a juke. Kicker, Mason Crosby, home favorite, high total. He's also very handsome. He has a nice photograph. He's good lighting. And he's got a distinguished kind of older dad look. It's a good look. Matt Prater kicks the ball really far, especially at home. So in a game that could have a lot of points scored, I love Matt Prater as well. I have no problem playing Matt Prater. Matt Prater, you remember, guys, Matt Prater hit a bunch of 50-yard game winners last year. They love letting Matt Prater just ding it, especially in the Metrodome. So, yeah, love him. Mason Crosby, Matt Prater, definitely on my radar for sure. So that's it, guys. Hey, player breakdown just in time for the drive home on Wednesday night. If you're not, you're at work on Thursday. Good stuff. Hey, follow us on Twitter at Hey Mr. Kane, at Lineup Logic DFS. I'm not very good at the at Lineup Logic DFS handle because then the switching on the Twitter, not my favorite. Patreon.com/lineuplogic if you want the cheat sheet. Comes out Friday. Lineup show Friday at 8:30. LineupLogicDFS.com. Content. Quick reads, too. It's not like you got to sit down and read a novel. Stuff's like quick hitters, you know, quick breakdowns, like little notes, the kind of thing that you can read, say, if you're on the John. I don't know. I don't know if people do that. Do people do that? Yeah, they do. I do. All right, guys, good luck. I'll talk to you later.